Breaking It Down with Frank McKay. This is 103.9 LI News Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone to Breaking It Down. Frank McKay here. So much more importantly, a wonderful singer, songwriter, musician, someone who is who's made a wonderful career for himself and is still going strong. The re-release, I should say, of his Years album is upon us and out there, and everyone can get that. And I'll tell you what, not to be confused with the jazz counterpart of the same name, Mark Johnson is our very special guest. Hey, Mark, how are you?
Great, thanks, Frank. Same name, different spelling.
Yeah.
I have a C at the end of Mark, and I surgically removed the H.
Yeah, it's funny. You were saying off mic that that you came across that, and you wanted to make sure that there was a differential between the spellings. But the thing is, it's a common name, and wow,
yeah.
Not much you can do if you're an artist and he's an artist. It's not much, but I think people know who you are. That's for sure. You've put your stamp on the music business, and you've done very well for yourself.
Thanks. I've been at it a while, and coming from Long Island, Merrick, Long Island, and so close to New York, used to sneak into the city when we were, me and my best friend, we used to sneak in when we were 13, 14 because of the energy, just getting into the city. The energy in the city was so different than the suburbs. And we loved it. We would walk by, all kinds of places, just anywhere. We used to go to Midtown and just walk around, and it was wonderful.
Yeah.
And see all the sights. And I knew, I was walking by people that were doing things in the music business and in the film business. I didn't recognize that many people, but you could feel their energy.
Well, the people that you're talking about might not have known who you were, but the people in the industry certainly knew your music and knew your skills, and people soon wanted to do your recordings and for yourself. Were you taken aback by that? I know a lot of people like to do their own music, and when other people want to do it, maybe the purist in some of us or in some musicians say, no, I want to do my own songs, let them do. I mean, did you look at the first time somebody reached out to you to do your song? Did you get that this was just a positive thing? There's nothing negative to that?
Yeah, I thought it was cool because in New York at the time, we were all kind of, we are still playing clubs and theaters in New York at that time. And your name would get around. Your name was constantly in the Village Voice. I remember meeting Tom Waits one night, and I said, "Hey, you're Tom Waits," and he goes, "Yeah, what's your name?" And I told him my name, and he knew who I was. He didn't know my music, but he knew who I was just from seeing it so many times in the Village Voice. So people's name got around, and when somebody was looking for a song, people just knew that reference me. I got into the next pool of songwriters that were, the just word of mouth got around, and people started saying, "Well, who do I go to get a good song?" And my name would come up, and so people started approaching me one way or the other. One time, I had left my guitar case at a friend of mine's house. And the girlfriend of Robert Gordon was friends with her. And Robert, she was going over to borrow something from this friend of mine who was her best friend or good friend of hers. And Robert was out in the car, and he had to go to the bathroom. So he came in the house to go to the bathroom, and he saw my guitar case on the floor with my name on it. And the night before, someone had just mentioned my name to him as somebody that might be have some good songs for him. So when he saw my guitar case after hearing my name the night before, he took that as a sign that he should get in touch with me. So that's how that happened. A lot of New York is so packed and so you know, it's so condensed that people's shadows were falling over each other all the time. You know, it was just, you know, it was just an incredible place to be for music and acting and film and painting and anything like that.
Yeah. You know, after Robert Gordon came Dave Edmonds and Paul Butterfield and so many others. But Frank McKay here, if you just joined us a little late or if you're just turning on your radios a little late, Mark Johnson is our very special guest. And he's a wonderful singer, songwriter, guitarist, just a very, very talented guy. The work he's done for Disney, too, shouldn't go unnoticed, and it hasn't. And I'm going a little by memory here. Cars was one of the films. Finding Nemo, is that correct?
Yeah.
And there was another big prominent.
Ratatouille.
Oh, Ratatouille, right? Ratatouille. Yeah. I mean, that's you know, but it's a big credit list right there, just on the writing for Disney. When did you get involved at Disney?
Well, that happened again through a friend. I grew up with. In Merrick, I went to school at Merrick Avenue Junior High School, and there was a guy two grades below me named Fred Mollen, who eventually got into the music business and produced that song, Sometimes When We Touch, which in the 70s, early 70s.
Dan Hill, and was that?
Dan Hill's song, yeah. And before he had done that, I ran into Fred at he was working at the Merrick paperback bookstore, and he was just such a character. And I struck up a conversation with him in the bookstore, and we became friends. And I was making my Vanguard album. I was making Years at the time. So I invited him to come in to the city and hang out. And he wound up singing and playing on Years. So as the years, then I kind of fell out of touch with him for a number of years. He went up to Toronto, which is where he did the Dan Hill thing. And he eventually started producing a lot of people like Christofferson. And he produced a Jimmy Webb, like four Jimmy Webb records.
Wow.
And he was hooked up with Jay Landers, who was a big producer over at Disney. And they were doing these companion CDs to the big blockbuster films. And I had moved at that point. I had moved to Nashville where Freddie had already moved. And one day he just called me up. He said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Nothing." He says, "Well, come on, I'll take you out to lunch." And he took me out to lunch, and we went back to his studio that day. And we just started working from a script that he had of lyrics for Finding Nemo, and he didn't tell me what it was for. And he said, "What would you do with an idea like this?" It was called Turtle Rock. And I thought to myself, "Well, Turtle Rock, doing the Turtle Rock, yeah, yeah, doing the Turtle Rock, yeah, yeah." And he loved it. Mm-hmm. And so that's how that happened. And so just from being around, and you know, just people are always doing stuff, so you know they're always you know, something to do and somebody to do it.
You know what that does really, the Disney situation, it bookends really what's a wonderful career. I mean, obviously there's a lot of things in there, but you had the success in in the 70s, right? I don't know what year it all kicked in, but the 72 I think was Years, right? That was when Years came out on Vanguard, and now, you know, what is that, 2017, you had Disney things, or, you know, somewhere along those lines. And I mean, that is a long, successful career when you bookend all of that, and certainly everything that comes in the middle. Mark Johnson is our very special guest, and he's a wonderful singer-songwriter, and just has put together an amazing career. Frank McKay here with Mark Johnson. Tell us a little bit more. You mentioned Merrick. You were born in, you know, on Long Island. You grew up on Long Island. What did your folks do for a living?
Oh, my father worked for the phone company, and my mom was just a housewife.
So, yeah, so you weren't born with a silver spoon in your mouth. I mean, you knew what it was to, like to work.
No, but my father had a lot to do with helping me get that recording contract, oddly enough. It's funny you mention that, because I had gone into the city with a demo tape in 1971, and I knew to go to 1650 Broadway because that was the other Brill Building, they called it.
Yeah.
And in the lobby directory, if you went into the lobby of 1650 Broadway back then, you would see all of these different record companies, and Dick Cavett show offices were there. And you knew that building was chock full of that electric energy. So when it came time for me to bring my demo tape into the city, I mean, I didn't have a manager. I didn't have a publisher. I didn't have anybody. I didn't have any contacts. I just went to that building because it was there. And I went up to the fifth floor and I knocked on a door. And a woman listened to four songs and called up her friend at RCA Records. This is all within 20 minutes. And a half hour later, I'm sitting in RCA Records, and the head of the jazz label, Elliot Horn, is listening to my demo tape.
Jeez.
And he loved it. And he says, I'm going to play it for Mort Hoffman, the vice president of the label. So I went home, and believe it or not, that night, my father was going to a retirement dinner for somebody in his office at the phone company was retiring, and they were seated at a table, and the woman at the table, at the end of the evening, my dad was leaving, and he had mentioned that I had something to do as he was getting up. I had something to do with RCA Records. And the woman sat my father back down and said, what are you talking about? What is this with RCA Records? And he says, well, my son says he just spoke to RCA Records today. And she goes, do you know that my brother is Rocco Laganastra, the president of the New York office of RCA Records? And I'm going to tell my brother to look out for your son's tape. So when Elliot Horn went to Mort Hoffman the next day or 2 days later, however long it was, Mort looked at him and said, who the heck is this guy? I've been hearing about him all morning from Rocco. So, you know, it's just stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, when the time is right, it's right. And the other side of that applies too. When the time is wrong, it's wrong.
Yeah. It's kismet though. I mean, it's when things like that happen, it's kismet. Do you know the song that stood out to them? Did you have it like lined up with your best foot forward, your best material forward? What was the song that that they ultimately heard? That
well, yeah, the nine songs that I put down on the demo tape were very melodic. They were very, it was very sparsely produced, but very it had a good arrangement. I had a good arrangement sense. And there was a song, the first song was called The Photograph Taker, and it was very hooky, and it was very Brian Wilson, and it was very, you know, catchy. And then every other song that followed was very catchy and very simply produced, and they got it. You know, it was a very good demo tape. People understood it, and, you know, there was no... You know, it was very evident that I had a good talent to sing and to play the guitar and to arrange my songs. And RCA actually wanted to sign me as a producer and also allow me to be an artist for their label and make my own record. But they wanted one of the first bands they wanted me to produce, who I did meet that week. I did come back and meet everybody at RCA, was Pure Prairie League. And they came up to me and they said, oh, we hear you're going to be our new producer. And you know, I hadn't signed any papers yet, and I wasn't sure if I was going to do that. I really didn't know if I wanted an office job at that point. I really sort of wanted to get off on my own and start working as an artist and get out and, you know, play shows. So I eventually turned that RCA deal down, and I signed immediately, got an offer with Vanguard Records, which is how I, you know, produce. That's how I made Years with Vanguard.
You mentioned having an office job. Would becoming a producer, doing bands like Prairie League, would that be an office job?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think they wanted me to have my own office and come in pretty regularly and, you know, 9 to 5 it. And that was, you know, I had just gotten done with 11 or 12 years of school. I didn't want to jump, you know, most of my friends at that point was still going to college. So I didn't know if I really was ready to, you know, kind of make a commitment to do that 9 to 5 thing in New York City.
Not a bad option to have. Let me just remind folks one more time. The voice you're hearing is Mark Johnson, singer-songwriter, producer, a creator of content, that's for sure, a creator of music. And he's been doing that for a long time. And you know his work from Disney with everything from Ratatouille to Cars I'm just going by memory. What was the other one? Cars... Ratatouille.
Finding Nemo. Ratatouille and Cars.
Yeah.
We did a couple of other things. We did a Disney meets Beach Boys album where the Beach Boys characters sing Disney songs.
See, I knew there was a Beach Boy connection there.
Yeah.
Was that the first and only connection that you had to Brian Wilson?
Well, they used to say I was his heir apparent. A lot of reviews in the 90s, after when 12 in a Room came out, people started saying I was Brian Wilson's heir apparent, or Phil Spector, one of the two.
Yeah,
I'll take it.
Yeah,
I'll take either one.
Did you have any meetings with either one of them along the way, or chance meetings or bump-ins?
Yeah, I did. I met Brian in New York City once, but nothing where we were working together. I recently, sort of back in 2014, that's not so recent anymore, but back in 2014, I ran into David Marks and Brian's ex-wife, Marilyn, and I gave them both a copy of 12 in a Room. And I said, you know, this is an album that I think you guys might like. I don't want to waste your time, but believe me, it's something up your alley. So just by being in that same sort of 12 in a Room, being having a foothold in that same kind of pop sensibility, I've brushed shoulders with people associated with Brian. Like David Leaf is a big fan of 12 in a Room. He had put it on his phone answering machine, one of the songs on it, on his phone answering machine at one point. Mm. And I'm Facebook friends with David.
Yeah.
And I work with Mark Lynette, who is Brian Wilson's engineer for the past 15 years. He did all the reissues of Pet Sounds, you know, when they remix them and turn them into quad and 5.1 stereo and stuff like that. Mark does all that. So
was he a big influence of yours? Was Brian Wilson?
He was, because I mean, I was listening to the Beach Boys before the Beatles and before the British Invasion, and they made a big impact on me. You know, in 61 and 62, as did Phil Spector. So they did have a big influence and continue to, you know, like every summer I just listen to Beach Boy records. I have a collection of them on a CD. And when I drive around and go wherever I go, and especially if I go to the beach or get out to a party or something, I like to put the Beach Boys on. It just, you know, it's got the spirit.
It's perfect. It's perfect, yeah, for what it is. Listen, Mark Johnson is our very special guest. Thrilled to have him here with us, a singer-songwriter extraordinaire. I mean, he really has made a nice career for himself, but you know, not a quick career either, just from the beginning to the bookends, and it's still going strong at this point. And the latest, Mark, and give us the latest. What's the latest?
The latest is an album we just finished My girlfriend and I go to Spain because she has an apartment there in Santander in the north. It's beautiful. And I had never been there. And I finally get over there. And it's a wonderful, you know, wonderful culture. I went over to do a tour there. A fan of mine invited me over, and he set up a tour for me. And he was a musician, and he and I toured around. And then we went back last year with my good friend from television, Richard Lloyd, the guitar player from television. We went to do another tour. And after that tour was over, we were going to be there for another 4 months. And I said to my girlfriend, Maria, we should get, I wish I had a band in Spain that I could play with. And we put the word out to a few people, and there happened to be these three guys that showed up, and they're wonderful performers, and they're real showmen. And it was a trio, so they needed a kind of a fourth guy. So they became my band. And so we went, you know, Munster Records had just put out the two albums, like you mentioned before. And so I asked the head of Munster if he would be willing to put a single out with me in this band. And he said, sure. And so we made My Girlfriend Doesn't Like the Ramones, which backed with I Don't Want to Go to School Today. And that came about because I was online all the time on my phone looking at Ramones videos for like 3 weeks in a row. And I was driving her crazy. Every time she'd walk in the room, she'd go, "You're not listening to another one of those, are you?"
Hey, keep your thought. Let me remind folks that have stepped away. Mark Johnson is our very special guest. And if you've stepped away and you're coming back, just a reminder, Breaking It Down is in progress, and our very special guest today is Mark Johnson. He's a singer, songwriter, and guitarist, just a wonderful performer and musician. And he's bookended a career from a solo act and kid from Long Island, Merrick Long Island to be exact. And he's bookended that with some great work with Disney. And you could hear his songs on Ratatouille and Cars and Finding Nemo. And again, millions and millions of people have heard this guy's music, and you probably have too. And I like to say he's one of the most famous guys you might not have heard of. And Mark Johnson is our very special guest. Thrilled to have you, Mark, once again. Let me go back, you know, way back. When did it all start for you? Did you get a guitar for Christmas? Did you just start singing? What was it? I know the bands that turned you on. The Beach Boys turned you on even before the British invasion. But what was your first move to get yourself actively involved in music?
Well, it was the a cappella groups of the 50s, late 50s, and certainly when Elvis showed up. I had an older cousin. He wasn't that much older. He was like 4 years older. And they lived in Massapequa, Long Island, in the South Shore. And they had my uncle and aunt had money. And so my cousin was always on top of getting the latest releases. And so when I would go over in the summer, especially, we'd go over to Massapequa to spend summers with them because they lived on the water. You would go into my cousin's room and it would be like a record store. And I got an education that I never would have gotten. I mean, I just listened to more than stuff that was being played on the radio. I mean, he had a huge record collection and it was available to me. And I had an older sister. I still have one. And she and my other cousin and me would just sit in my cousin's room and just absorb this incredible music, especially when I heard Hound Dog. That really made a big impression on me. prior to that, my biggest influence probably was the Ballad of Davy Crockett, which came out in the early 50s, that everybody was, you know, all the kids had coonskin caps and Davy Crockett fringe shirts. But that song that Bill Hayes sang was really, really a powerful influence on me at such an early age. And then the next influence probably was Elvis, Hound Dog. And then the whole litany of Elvis singles that came after that, Wear My Ring Around Your Neck, Hard-Headed Woman, Don't, all of those Elvis songs that were incredible singles were my main influence. And we had a piano in my house as I grew up as a kid. So even long before I picked up the guitar, I played the piano. And then in the fourth grade, I started playing the drums. And so between all the great records that were coming out in the late 50s and especially early 60s, Dion DiMucci was a big influence on me. Yeah. You know, these guys that were just, they had some kind of incredible, you know, song and a great voice, great arrangement, infectious, you know, I'm a sucker for a great arrangement. Mm. And, you know, I just took to pop music like nobody's business.
You know, I wonder why it still blows me away every time I hear that, and I hear the harmonies on that, and just the structure of that song by Dion and the Belmonts. Just, you know, unbelievable talent. And I can imagine hearing it for the first time back then when there really wasn't a lot going on like that. You know, there, you had nice harmonies or whatever, but I think they took it to another level. Dion,
he did. He did. He took it to the Bronx. You know, he infused it with the energy from the Bronx, the urban energy. He infused it, and they were Italian, beautiful Italian voices. You know, the guys, they had great voices, and he made something new out of it, and you know, it was great. It still is.
Again, Mark Johnson is the voice that you're hearing. Frank McKay here, with singer-songwriter and a performer, guitarist. Mark Johnson, again, is our very special guest. And people like Robert Gordon and Dave Edmonds, Paul Butterfield, and of course, Disney got use of his songwriting talents. And when he's not doing solo work, other people are busy doing his work. Really has put together a wonderful career. Thrilled to have Mark Johnson here with us, Frank McKay with Mark. Hey, Mark, give us something that we might not know about your career that we either haven't covered here, but you think it's important to point out.
Well, the Roaches did a good version of a song I wrote called Love Radiates Around that got nominated for a New York Music Award back in the day, about 86 or so. It's a wonderful version of a song I wrote called Love Radiates Around. I can't think of anything that people, I mean, you know, I put everything up on my website, and I've been doing a lot of interviews and a lot of, we did a big long interview for Shindig magazine and Mike Stax's Ugly Things magazine. And it's pretty much the same saga, the same story of just some guy from Long Island, you know, all of his friends going off to college, and going into the city with a demo tape and getting lucky. And that's the story, you know, and it's, and my advice for anybody out there now is to, you know, persevere and to try to find some way to make your path unique. You know, there's so many new ways now of getting your music out to where it should be, but I still think there's too many people trying to do the same thing. So my advice is to try to find a unique way to do it and to stand out, and you might just get lucky.
Listen, just terrific. You're a modest guy. Yeah, I mean, luck touches that, but the cream also rises to the top. and without the talent, and you could just listen to any one of your songs, and it's just terrific material, and you know the talent's there, and it's always been there. And I'm a big believer in talent, and when you have it, it rises to the top. Mark Johnson, once again, has been our very special guest, Frank McKay, here. And check out his latest. And, Mark, I'm going to point to you once again, just in closing, give us a website, give us a social media site where people can follow along, and where can they get all the records?
Well, you can go to markjohnson.com, no K on Mark and no H in Johnson, markjohnson.com. And there's a little store there where you can get the CDs directly mailed out to you, and read up about, you know, the latest adventures that I'm having. We have a show coming up tomorrow with my very good friend Willie Nile in New Jersey at the Stanhope House.
Well, yeah, I don't think people will hear this by tomorrow, but you're welcome to give it, you know.
Okay.
But the main thing is to watch his website
I'm on Facebook. I'm on Facebook with markjohnson, and on Twitter, same thing, same spelling.
Look, maybe I can get you back for a part two. I'd love to follow up on there's a million questions I need to ask you, but
sure.
Unfortunately, we're out of time. Mark Johnson, singer-songwriter, has been our very special guest. Mark, congratulations on just a wonderful career, and thank you again for being here.
Yeah, thanks, Frank. I really had fun.
Yeah, and same here, and to all of you for listening, thank you. And again, Mark Johnson, look him up. It's I'll give you the spelling. It's a unique spelling, M-A-R-C, which isn't so unique, but J-O-N-S-O-N. Don't mix them up with the jazz artist, but his album Years is a must. Everyone has to have that. And
12 in a room.
And 12 in a room. And just check out his material. Go ahead.
And there's a bunch more on the website. Last Night on the Roller Coaster was a big favorite. There's another album called Mark Johnson and the Wild Alligators, which is a big favorite. And Munster is planning a new album, which we finished this past winter, called When. And that should be out as soon as we get a booking agent and we get a tour set up. So that's what's coming in the near future.
Well, Mark Johnson, thanks again. And to everyone, we'll see you all next time on Breaking It Down.